Welcome to the Movement Church Podcast. Our vision is to be a movement of people finding their way back to God. For more information about Movement Church, including attending a worship experience, getting connected, or to give online, please visit movementcolumbus.com.
Well, good morning. My name is Sarah, and I'm part of the teaching and research team here at Movement Church, and I'm excited this morning to kick this series off with you. As Mark said, we're going to start talking about leadership and what that looks like and how we see that in Scripture. And as I was thinking about this week, I thought there are like 1 million different things that we could talk about. When you think of leadership, I'm guessing that all kinds of images come to your mind. You probably, hopefully, think of some really great leaders that you have known. Maybe those are people that you work with or work for, or people that you see in your family, your day-to-day life. You probably also, unfortunately, have quite a few terrible examples that come to your mind. Some of you are actually nodding your heads pretty vigorously. Okay, so this is going to hit some nerves. I love it. Like people that, you know, are the boss, but everyone in the office knows, like, that person doesn't have a clue what they're doing. And if you're the boss, you're thinking, oh my gosh, I hope that that's not me, right? That there are these people who have become leaders because they have like worked themselves into that position. They've got promoted to the point of incompetence, which unfortunately seems to happen. You're good at something and they just keep pushing you further and further ahead. And then you get to the point where like now you're not good at it anymore. And so you're like, I'm stuck at this level being in charge of people and actually I'm so bad at it. I wish I could go back to the thing I was doing before. We find that people are holding on to like, this is my credential. This is the reason that I deserve to be in charge because I've worked at this place for X number of years or because I went to school for this many years and now I have all of these letters that come after my name that no one even really knows what all those letters stand for, but man, they make me sound important. And we hold on to those things and say like, this is what makes me qualified to lead. And where we wanna start with this series is by examining the idea that actually real leaders are qualified to lead not because of their credentials, but because of their character. Real leaders are qualified to lead not because of their credentials, but because of their character. And so as I was thinking about this, today what we're gonna do is we're gonna look at a story from the life of Paul. And just so you know, everything is going to go wrong in this story. Like it is going to be a terrible, terrible scenario. If it could go wrong for Paul, it's going to go wrong for Paul. He's wrongly arrested. He ends up in a shipwreck. And a part of the story that we're not going to read, but that also happens is that he gets bitten by a poisonous snake and everyone thinks that he's going to die. Okay, so like it's a bad day for Paul. And I was thinking like, what are the times in my life where like I have gone through really, really bad situations and I have been looking to someone to lead me? And I mean, there are lots that we could talk about, but I found myself thinking a great deal about when I used to lead high school ministry trips. I would lead these teams that were called Operation Barnabas. I did it for 8 summers. And we would be together with a group of high school kids for 7 weeks traveling around the country. And we lived in an old school bus. Which sounds like an adventure, but actually it's really terrible. And these old school buses are like really old. In fact, the one that I drove for several years was older than I was, which I thought like, this is not safe, but okay. So we would like put all these high school kids on these school buses, and then we would drive like from California to Ohio, okay? And if you're thinking like, that sounds like a really long time, yeah, it was, with like 30 high school kids just all living in there with you, and half of them are boys, and they smell so bad, okay? And there were many times, I mean, I don't even know how to pick one story, because there were many times during these summers that I spent on the road, where our bus would just end up like broken down, sometimes on the side of the road, sometimes just in the middle of the road. It would just stop running. And no matter where I was, the first person that I always called was my dad. Now, my dad lives in southeastern Pennsylvania, so basically 99.99% of the time, my dad was nowhere close enough to be able to actually literally help me. But if I was like, it happened one time where we were kind of in northern Ohio, and we were driving down the road, and literally in the middle of the road, while we're driving 50 miles an hour, the bus just stops running. And so we're like, oh, okay, this is very unsafe, you know? So we like turn the flashers on. We make the kids get out of the bus and push it off of the road, which maybe you're thinking like, that's not safe. But you know, what else are you going to do? I don't know. There's a lot of them and they have a lot of momentum behind them. So we push the bus off of the road, and I immediately call my dad because, like, what else are you going to do? Like, my first reaction is not to say, like, let me find someone close by who could probably help me. I just think, like, my dad, he's going to be able to fix this. And so he tries to give me some ideas. Actually, his idea was that we would just push the bus and pop the clutch and get it started that way. And that actually worked. That's what we did. So that was the first time I ever popped a clutch on a vehicle, was on like a 28-year-old school bus with 30 high school kids pushing it down a road. So, you know, maybe don't let your kids hang out with me. I don't know what to say. But there was another time where we were about 3 hours away from where my dad lives. And it was probably 10 o'clock at night. We were driving down a road. And yet again, the bus just shuts off. It will not go. And so it's dark at this time when this happens. And we're like 10 miles from where we're trying to go. This bus was an automatic, so no clutch popping. Actually, if you can do it on an automatic, I don't know how. Okay, but I just figured, like, well, we can't use the same sort of technique that we used before. So I'm calling my dad. My dad is, like, you know, working through all these different ideas. He gets off the phone with me, calls me back like an hour later. He said, okay, I went to like a 24-hour like garage and I bought the parts that I think that you need. You want me to just drive out to where you are? I'm like, Dad, it's like 11 o'clock at night. You're going to drive all the, it'll be like 2 o'clock in the morning when you get here. He's like, I mean, I'll come out there if you want me to come out there. I'll fix it for you if you want me to fix it. The number of times in my life where something goes horribly wrong and the first thing that I think to do is to call my dad. I'm like a 33-year-old, apparently independent person who every time something goes wrong, I think, you know who's going to fix this for me? My dad. He lives 400 miles from here. And my dad, in case you're thinking, like, maybe her dad's a bus mechanic and it makes sense that she keeps calling him. My dad is a structural engineer, okay? So, like, this is not his job. He works at a nuclear power plant. He, like, makes sure that the building doesn't fall down every day. So there are probably lots of people much closer to me. Some of you are thinking, like, maybe you should call me, or maybe you don't want me to call you because my problems are so ridiculous. But there are probably people who are closer to me who are more credentialed to be able to step in and to fix the situation. But here's what I have to tell you, and you probably think I'm biased because he's my dad, but I have to tell you that my dad has the character of someone that I would follow anywhere, anywhere. And so it doesn't matter what the problem is. It doesn't matter how bad things have gotten. I completely expect that if anyone is going to be able to help me, it's my dad. And it doesn't matter how far away he is or how ridiculous it is that I'm asking him to help me diagnose this situation. I know that no matter what is going on, when I call, my dad is going to answer and my dad is going to help me figure out what to do next. Even if that means he's going to get in his car and drive 3 hours to meet me to make this whole thing better. And so I want us to start to think about, okay, so who are those people in your life specifically? Who are those people that you think, like, when everything's falling to pieces, this is the person that I know that I can turn to? Not just I know I can turn to them because they're going to listen, but I know that I can turn to them because they're going to find a way to help me navigate my way through and out of this situation. And I want you to start to think about, is that because those people are so credentialed to help you? Maybe sometimes that's the case. But I'm guessing that many of the times that you're thinking about and the people that you would turn to, it has less to do with the fact that, like, oh, they have all of the right reasons to be able to lead you, and they've actually just proven to you that they are worth following. This is a biblical idea. And unfortunately, I think in our world, particularly in our business world today, it is countercultural, okay? And so for some of us, we may have to think, like, okay, what I don't want us to do through this whole series, what I don't want us to do is to, like, create this dichotomy that exists. Like, well, this is how I lead if I'm with my family or if I'm in the church. But when I lead at my job, it has to be different. Because, you know, when you're at your job, things are cutthroat and you got to be the one who gets it all done and you got to be the one who makes everyone else look stupid so that you look the smartest so that you get the next promotion. And what we're trying to consider here this morning is that actually, if I call myself a follower of Jesus, the way that I lead is the way that I lead. Whether I'm with my family or I'm at my job or I'm at my church, the way that I lead is the way that I lead. It shouldn't be different depending on the scenario that I find myself in. Now, I know that some of you think that I'm naive. That's okay. We're going to see what Scripture has to say about it. So you can think that I don't know what I'm talking about. That is 100% fine. Maybe I don't have the credentials to talk about this, but we're going to go straight to Scripture and see what Scripture has to say about what it looks like for us as followers of Jesus to be men and women who lead in the spaces that we're in, okay? So we're going to start by just looking at a couple of verses that are in Matthew 20, which is page 751, if you're using a Bible underneath your chair, 751. And as you're turning there, I'm just going to ask the Lord to speak to us this morning. Feel free to keep turning while I'm praying. That's okay. You don't have to have your eyes closed. Father, thank you for this morning, and thank you that you give us your word. And God, I confess that so often I take it for granted that I have multiple copies of the record of your life and the record of the things that you said. That so often I take that for granted and I don't make the use of it that I should. But God, I thank you that we live in a place and in a time where we have access to your word in our own language and where we have been educated enough that we're actually able to read it for ourselves. God, this morning I ask that you would speak to us. I ask that you would speak to us through your words. I ask that you would speak to us through the life of Paul. I ask that you would shape us this morning into men and women who are living lives that are so full of character that people want to follow us the places that we're going. We give you this morning, Jesus, in your name. Amen. Okay, so Matthew chapter 20, and we're going to read verses 25 to 28. Matthew chapter 20, 25 to 28. I just want to start here so that we can begin by seeing what is it that Jesus has to say about leadership. I think sometimes we think of Jesus just as this like really nice guy who walked around smiling a lot, and maybe you consider that he was like always holding a child or had a lamb around his neck. For some reason, that tends to be the way that we draw pictures of him. Jesus was actually not a shepherd. He was a carpenter, but you know, it's fine. Maybe he liked lambs. I don't know. But Jesus had some really important things to say, not just about the way that we find eternal life, but Jesus spoke to the issues of life. He spoke to things that are relevant to us today. So we're in verse 25. Jesus called them, that's his disciples, his followers. He called them together and he said, "You know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you, it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must become your slave. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Right off the bat here, we see that this is what Jesus has to say, and the words that he speaks to his disciples that live approximately in the year 30 AD, it is remarkable to me every time I read this passage how insanely relevant it is to today, 21st century. You know that the rulers of this world lord it over their people, that they have authority. And again, I think that some of you know what this feels like in a very intimate way because of the jobs that you work and the bosses that you have. Your boss wants you to know it's my way or the highway. You don't disagree with me. You don't get to call the shots because I'm the boss around here. I don't care that your idea is better than mine. No, thank you. I'm in charge. And if you have tried to function under a person like that, you know how frustrating that feels. You have probably said things like, "Someday when I'm the boss, I'm gonna," or "One day when I don't work here anymore, I'm gonna do things differently." Or maybe you think like, "I can't wait till I'm his boss and then I'm gonna give him what for," you know? We understand this idea that people in the world, when they lead, they are lording their authority over us. And Jesus says, if you call yourself my follower, you will not lead that way. If you are a follower of me, then if you want to lead, the first thing you must do is serve. And this seems so backwards to us. Like, I want you to imagine the most important people in your job, the most powerful people in your job, the president of your company or whatever, the vice president or the director who's over you. You show up to work tomorrow and you walk into the bathroom and you find them just on their hands and knees cleaning out the toilets and scrubbing down the floors. And they're doing it with this like bright grin on their faces. And they say like, oh my gosh, it's so good to see you. I just thought I had a little extra time this morning. And so I just thought I'd come in and do this so that no one else had to do it. Now, I don't know about you, but probably you can't imagine something like that would happen. And some of you who are in charge are thinking like, no way, I would not do that. I got more important things to do. And also we pay other people to do that. I am not doing that. Especially gentlemen. I just have this feeling that boys' bathrooms are way worse than girls' bathrooms. I don't, maybe that's not fair to say. It just feels like that, okay? They're not? Not worse? Nah, I don't believe you. Okay. This doesn't seem like something that we would jump in and want to do, and yet what Jesus is saying is, I want you to be willing to serve. If you want to lead, you must start by serving. And so this brings us to the life of Paul, okay? We get to Acts 27, so you can turn there to Acts 27, where that's page 854 if you're using a Bible under your chair. We get to Acts 27, and we encounter Paul. Okay, now many of us are familiar with Paul. Let me give you a little background on him if you don't know who he is. Paul grew up as a Jewish man, a very important leader of the Jews. He was born in the tribe of the Jews that gained the most respect. He was trained as a religious teacher, and he carried a lot of authority when the early church, the followers of Jesus, came into power. He was not a follower of Jesus. He was someone who was fighting tooth and nail against the church of Jesus. So he was actually traveling from town to town, finding people who were calling themselves followers of Jesus, and he was imprisoning them and sometimes actually putting those people to death. He was, according to Jewish standards, like one of the greatest Jews around. And then Jesus intercedes in his life. And he shows Paul the truth of who he really is. And Paul says like, oh my gosh, everything in my life needs to change. So Paul stops persecuting the Christians and becomes a Christ follower. Now, you probably can pretty quickly deduce here that the Christians at first are not buying this. Like, oh yeah, sure, okay, Paul. Now you want to be part of the church even though just yesterday you were trying to kill all of us? Yeah, this seems very reasonable. And so they're not real wild about him joining them. And Paul has a guy who sticks up for him. His name is Barnabas. Barnabas says, like, I believe that God has done a powerful work in his life. God has done a powerful work in my life. And if I can believe he's done it in me, then I can believe he's done it in Paul. And so Barnabas vouches for Paul over and over and over again. For the first several years of Paul being a Christ follower, the only reason that he gets any opportunities to do anything is because Barnabas sticks up for him. Barnabas becomes the guy who brings him along everywhere that he goes. And what begins to happen is that Barnabas starts to fade into the background, and Paul becomes this guy who gets a lot of prominence and a lot of respect. And towards the end of kind of Paul's ministry, in about the year 58 AD, Paul is teaching in the city of Jerusalem, and what he's saying gets a bunch of people so worked up that they start a riot. And so the Roman official that's there arrests Paul because he says, I can't put up with you kind of like creating this all of this trouble for us. And so Paul is now arrested. He's in prison for more than 2 years, stands multiple trials in front of multiple people. And finally, Paul says, you know what? I, as a Roman citizen, because of where Paul was born, he was not only a Jew, but he was also granted Roman citizenship. He says, as a Roman citizen, I appeal to Caesar. I want Caesar to be the one who hears my case and decides my fate. So to bring this into kind of like modern day, you know, you could consider this as like, I'm taking my case all the way to the Supreme Court. I want the highest court in the land to hear my story and decide my fate. And so the people who are holding him captive say, that's your right as a Roman citizen. And so we're going to put you on a boat and we're going to send you to Rome. Okay, and so this is where we're picking the story up in chapter 27. The journey to Rome by ship, according to kind of the path that they take, is somewhere between like 1,500 and 1,800 miles. So this is like, you know, not a joke. They're like making a serious journey here. So we're in Acts 27. We're going to read this kind of bit by bit. We're going to read the first 10 or 12 verses here at the beginning. So we'll start in verse 1. When the time came, we set sail for Italy. Paul and several other prisoners were placed in the custody of a Roman officer named Julius, a captain of the imperial regiment. Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica, was also with us. We left on a ship whose home port was Adramyttium. I practiced it so many times and I still don't feel good about it. On the northwest coast of the province of Asia. It was scheduled to make several stops at ports along the coast of the province. The next day we docked at Sidon. Julius was very kind to Paul and let him go ashore to visit with friends so that they could provide for his needs. Putting out to sea from there, we encountered strong headwinds that made it difficult to keep the ship on course. So we sailed north to Cyprus because the island, between the island and the mainland. Keeping to the open sea, we passed along the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, landing at Myra in the province of Lycia. There, the commanding officer found an Egyptian ship from Alexandria that was bound for Italy, and he put us on board. We had several days of slow sailing, and after great difficulty, we finally neared Cnidus. But the wind was against us, so we sailed across Crete and along the sheltered coast of the island, past the Cape of Salmone. We struggled against the coast with great difficulty and finally arrived at Fair Havens near the town of Lassia. We had lost a lot of time. The weather was becoming dangerous for sea travel because it was so late in the fall, and Paul spoke to the ship's officers about it. "Men," he said, "I believe there's trouble ahead if we go on. Shipwreck, loss of cargo, and danger to our lives as well." But the officer in charge of the prisoners listened more to the ship's captain and the owner than to Paul. And since Fair Havens was an exposed harbor, a poor place to spend the winter, most of the crew wanted to go on to Phoenix, farther up the coast of Crete, and spend the winter there. Phoenix was a good harbor with only a southwest and northwest exposure. Okay, so maybe you're thinking, like, what are we? We're just, like, reading the journal here. Like, what's happening? What are we going to learn from this story? Again, I want to remind you of Paul's position at this point. Paul is a Jew, and in the Roman Empire, the Jews were not like some sort of well-respected group of people. They're a relatively small nation that has been defeated and now is being occupied by Rome. So Paul is a Jew, and Paul is also a prisoner, and he's been a prisoner for years. Now, it's easy for us to look at that and say, like, yeah, but he was, like, wrongly accused, and he was only a prisoner because he was doing what God wanted him to do and was talking about who Jesus is. Yeah, sure, we can see that. But I want you to try to see this story from the eyes of the Romans who are on this boat transporting Paul to the city of Rome. All they see in Paul is just another Jewish prisoner. They don't really know his story. They don't care about his story. He is just along for the ride. And yet, notice what happens in verse 3. It is remarkable what takes place in verse 3. "The next day, when we docked at Sidon, Julius was very kind to Paul and let him go ashore to visit with friends so that they could provide for his needs." Okay, Julius is like a Roman captain. He's a Roman official. Julius is so kind to Paul that he lets him leave the ship and go visit his friends. Okay, now I don't know if you like watch any kind of shows like Law and Order or whatever, where they're dealing with people who have been arrested, but it's not typically common practice to say to someone who is like in jail, "Would you just like to like go, you know, home with your friends for a few days? You can like hang out and they can take care of you and then you'll come back." We don't do that because, like, most prisoners would not return. They would say, like, "Sure," and then they're out. Because there's a reason that many people would argue that these people are locked behind bars. We cannot trust them or trust their behavior because of some sort of previous decision that they've made. And yet, with Paul, a prisoner, he has somehow begun to gain the trust of the people around him enough that they say, "Hey, we've got a few days. You want to go visit your friends? Go visit your friends." Now, we haven't begun to see yet the way that Paul is going to lead these people, but the first thing that I want to suggest to you is that leaders, above all else, leaders are people who are trustworthy. Leaders have earned the trust of the people around them. And again, we have to get out of our minds that leaders are simply people that have the credentials and that have the corner office and that have the authority to tell people what to do. We're talking about people who are actually leading others. We're talking about moms and dads who lead their kids. We're talking about employees who are in the middle or at the bottom of the totem pole who still have people that rally around them and listen to what they have to say. We're talking about teachers who work in classrooms with a bunch of sometimes very ornery children. We are talking about people who actually lead, not just leader in title, but people who actually lead. Those people, above all else, are trustworthy. They are people who care more about the success of their followers than they care about their own reputation. Someone who is a real trustworthy leader doesn't care if he or she gets all of the accolades at the end of the day, or if everybody knows that was my idea, I'm the one who pushed it forward. What a leader really cares about, a trustworthy leader, cares about developing the people around them and seeing them be successful. A trustworthy leader is someone that you know, I could follow you anywhere that you're going to take me, and you are never going to leave me hanging out to dry. Some of you have experienced that, where your leader has been leading you, leading you, leading you, and then when everything falls apart, they say, oh, this wasn't my idea, it was his. And then you have to take all of the flack for it. And you think, somehow I thought we were all in this together when everything was going well, and now that it's all fallen apart, I'm the fall guy? Thank you so much. Trustworthy leaders lead their people, protect their people, and let their people know, I care more about your success than about my success. I'm going to serve you, like Jesus said. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to work hard so that you know that you're valuable and that it's not about me. Again, if you think about the people that you want to follow, you think about the people that you care the most about, where would they take me? And if something is going bad, I want to connect myself to them. They're probably people who have earned your trust. Not people who have the right credentials, but people who have earned your trust. Right here at the beginning of the story, we get this hint that this is who Paul is. He is someone who has begun to earn the trust of the people around him. Now, again, you might be saying, like, what's the big deal, Sarah? He just got to go, like, visit his friends for a couple of days. Okay, but things are going to ramp up here pretty quickly. And so before we get to how Paul leads, I want you to see so clearly that what Paul has begun to do, and we don't get all the details of how, but what Paul has begun to do is he has begun to develop trust with the men around him. Against all odds, against his credentials, he is developing their trust. Now, I want you to see what comes next. So we're going to pick it up in verse 13. When a light wind began blowing from the sailors, I'm sorry. When a light wind began blowing from the south, the sailors thought that they could make it. So they pulled up anchor and sailed close to the shore of Crete. But the weather changed abruptly, and a wind of typhoon strength called a nor'easter burst across the island and blew us out to sea. The sailors couldn't turn the ship into the wind, so they gave up and let it run before the gale. We sailed along the sheltered side of a small island called Cauda, where with great difficulty we hoisted aboard the lifeboat being towed behind us. Then the sailors bound ropes against the hull of the ship to strengthen it. They were afraid of being driven across to the sandbars of Sirtis off the African coast, so they lowered the sea anchor to slow the ship and were driven before the wind. The next day, as gale force winds continued to batter the ship, the crew began throwing the cargo overboard. The following day, they even took some of the ship's gear and threw it overboard. The terrible storm raged for many days, blotting out the sun and the stars until at last all hope was gone. Okay, so this is how you know the story's going super well. All hope is gone, okay? No one had eaten for a long time. Maybe this is how you know all hope is gone. There's no more food. Finally, Paul called the crew together and said, "Men, you should have listened to me in the first place and not left Crete. You would have avoided all the damage and loss. But take courage. None of you will lose your lives, even though the ship will go down. For last night, an angel of God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood beside me, and he said, 'Don't be afraid, Paul, for you will surely stand trial before Caesar. What's more, God in his goodness has granted safety to everyone sailing with you. So take courage, for I believe God. It will be just as he said, but we will be shipwrecked on an island.'" So just in case you were starting to feel really good, like, also, by the way, we're going to get shipwrecked. Okay. What we notice here is, like, things are getting worse and worse and worse. And Paul had tried to comment, like, I think maybe this is what we should do. And understandably so, the captain had said, well, you know, it's nice that this Roman official trusts you enough to go ashore, but I'm the sailor, not you, Paul, so I'm going to do what I think is best. And now they find themselves in a really bad situation. And so at the end of these verses, Paul says, look, I suggested to you that we do something different. However, I want you to know that not all hope is lost. I want you to know that things are going to be okay. I want you to know that everyone is going to live. Now, if you have been in a situation where you have made a suggestion and the suggestion was not taken and then everything just fell to pieces, I want you to think about what your reaction in those moments has been. Now, maybe you are a much better person than I am, but I tend to feel a little bit of victory in those moments, like, if you would have listened to me, this would be way better, but you picked your own plan and now it's a disaster. Guess you're just gonna have to suffer through it. Like, we take this delight in the fact that, like, I knew better and now it's gone badly, and so good luck to you. Paul doesn't do this. Because again, Paul's leadership is not wrapped up in his credential. Paul's leadership is wrapped up in his character. And so what his character drives him to do is to continue to bring comfort and leadership to a group of people who need it. He isn't being some sort of passive-aggressive jerk here. He isn't just being an aggressive jerk. He's not doing any of those things. He's not flaunting in their faces that they don't know what they're doing. He simply says, look, all hope isn't lost. We could have avoided this situation if you would have listened the first time around, but I'm not here to tell you that I was right and you were wrong. I'm simply here to tell you God is still going to take care of us. Real leaders are trustworthy, and real leaders also work hard to strengthen the people around them. Because again, leadership isn't about I'm the best person in the room and I'm the smartest person in the room and everyone bows down and worships me when I walk in the room. Leadership is about my people feeling strengthened and feeling empowered. And that they feel that way no matter what bad decisions they've made before. That I don't continue to flaunt over them how they screwed it up yesterday. Oh, well, I would entrust this issue, this project to you, but remember what a disaster it was yesterday, and no one's ever gonna forget that, so maybe you should just find another job. Or that you do this with your kids. Like, they want to help you with something, and you say, like, the last time you helped me with something, you spilled 9 gallons of paint all over the ground, and now our driveway is white instead of black, and it's really obnoxious, and that paint costs $500, and then we're going to take that out of your allowance from now until the day that you go to college. So no, you cannot help me with any more projects. That what, as parents, what you do is you say, like, no, okay, I want to strengthen and empower you. I don't flaunt over you the fact that you screwed it up yesterday. I continue to try to point you in the direction that you're supposed to go. Not with an attitude, but with grace and with love. Because leadership isn't about credential, it's about character. One last thing that I want you to see, because I think this is so important. Starting verse 27. About midnight on the 14th night of the storm, we were being driven across the Sea of Adria, and the sailors sensed that land was near. They dropped a weighted line and found that the water was 120 feet deep, but a little later they measured again and found it was only 90 feet deep. At this rate, they were afraid we would soon be driven against the rocks along the shore, so they threw out 4 anchors from the back of the ship and prayed for daylight. Then the sailors tried to abandon the ship. They lowered the lifeboat as though they were going to put out anchors from the front of the ship. But Paul said to the commanding officer and the soldiers, "You will all die unless the sailors stay aboard." So the sailors cut the ropes to the lifeboat and let it drift away. Just as day was dawning, Paul urged everyone to eat. "You have been so worried that you haven't touched food for 2 weeks," he said. "Please eat something now for your own good, for not a hair of your heads will perish." Then he took some bread and gave thanks to God before them all, and broke off a piece and ate it. Then everyone was encouraged and began to eat, all 276 of us who were on board. After eating, the crew lightened the ship further by throwing the cargo of wheat overboard. As Paul continues to help these people navigate through the tragedy that they are in, he leads and empowers by his example. And so as you think about what this looks like in your life, as you think like what it looks like to be someone who leads not because of your credentials, but because of your character, in what way are you coming alongside of the people that you lead and you're getting your hands dirty with them and you're engaging with them in the things that they're going through? And maybe you look at this and you go like, okay, well, it was easy, you know, for Paul, he was just eating with them. Like, if leading just meant I ate with people all the time, like, I am in. But these people are terrified. And it feels like there are 9,000 other things that they're supposed to be doing. And Paul says, look, we need to just like take a minute. We need to take a breath. We need to eat some food. And look, I'm going to eat some food with you. Let's be in this together. Leaders lead, real leaders lead, because of their character and not their credentials. And so it has to do with becoming a person who is trustworthy, and it has to do with becoming a person who is strengthening others, and it has to do with becoming a person who is leading by your example. And so whether that is in the boardroom or it's in the nursery, whether it is with powerful executives or it's with a group of janitors or it's with little kids, whether it's with your spouse or it's with your roommate or it's with your coworkers, you are surrounded by people. And we are so quick to say, yeah, but I don't lead any of those people. That is a lie. Leadership is not about hierarchy. Leadership is about the trust that you've built with people and becoming a person of character that is inviting other people to follow you. It doesn't mean that you're the Pied Piper. It doesn't mean that you have all the answers. And it doesn't mean that they have to just bow down and worship you because you know more than they do. It simply means that you are becoming a person of character that when things really start to get stressful, they turn and they look to you. And they're willing to listen to you, again, not because you are so wise, but because you are connected to the God who is. As leaders, we are men and women who, as we follow him, we look to the people around us and we say, what can I do to serve you so that you will trust me enough to want to listen to my voice? I know I said that my dad is someone who does this with the buses that I drive, which maybe seems very silly to you, but I will tell you that there are not many people that I respect in the world more than my dad. And it is not because he has demanded respect from people. It is because he is someone who serves no matter what. He is someone who is always concerned about the people around him. He leads because of his character. He has led our family. He has led at his job. He leads at his church. He leads his friends because the people around him know this is a man who has enough character to point us in the way that we are supposed to go. It is not about credentials. We have to get that idea out of our heads, men and women who live in America, who live in the 21st century, who are just so concerned about moving ourselves up the ladder. Leadership is not about credentials. So if you don't have credentials, stop letting yourself off the hook. You lead the people around you. It is what you are called to do. We lead because we have the opportunity to lead people to Jesus. That's what this is about. Before we go anywhere else in this series, we have to begin by understanding that leadership is about who we are. Leadership is about who we are becoming. That's why these things matter, because people are following you. Your choices do not only impact yourself, your choices impact the people around you. Leadership is about who you are. And so as we close this morning, I'm going to pray for us, and as I'm praying, all I want you to consider is this: who are you becoming? Like the path that you're walking right now and the decisions that you're making right now, who are you becoming? Are you becoming someone that is trustworthy and that strengthens other people and that empowers other people by your example? Or are you simply someone who is concerned about having all of the right positions and making sure that people know that you're in charge? Who are you becoming? Because if you are not becoming the kind of person that is worth following, people are not ever going to follow you. And to be honest, I don't think that the Lord wants people to follow you. Who are you becoming? My prayer for us this morning is that we are becoming a church full of people who have character that is worth following. That when we start to think like, man, who are the people in my world that I would trust enough to follow, that the list has become so long that we can't even make it. Oh my gosh, well, I feel like I trust basically everyone in my movement group because look at the character that they've developed. And I feel like I trust basically everyone that I serve with on a Sunday morning because like they're all so willing to take care of each other. And I feel like I trust these like women that I've met at my church, and we go out to lunch once a month, and I just think like, man, their character and the way that they like love their children and love their husbands and work so hard in their jobs. There are so many people that I would follow. Because the character of the people that I'm surrounded by is so driven to become more and more like Jesus. Let's stop being so concerned about our position and let's start being much more concerned about who we are. Let God move you forward. Let God be the one who promotes you. Let God be the one who gives you the credit that you deserve. Let's stop being so freaked out about that and just start becoming people who are worth following. As I pray, that's just what I want you to consider. Do I need to make changes in my life this week? Is there a particular area that I need to adjust so that I am becoming a person that is worth following? Will you pray with me? Father, I can see so many areas in my life where I think my character struggles. It's easy to have the character that is right when things are easy, but when things are falling apart, when the ship is being driven out to sea and shipwreck is unavoidable and there's no food, often my character doesn't look the way that it is supposed to look. I become selfish. I become proud. I want to flaunt the fact that like, haha, I knew the right answers and you jokers wouldn't listen to me. And I stop being so concerned about being a person who is building trust and who is strengthening other people and who is empowering people to follow my example. I stop being concerned about who I am and I am just concerned about my position. Father, I want to be different. I want to be concerned about who I'm becoming because who I'm becoming doesn't just impact me. It impacts every person I come into contact with. I ask you this morning, God, that as your spirit is speaking to each one of us individually, that you would be prompting us and leading us and indicating to us, here are the ways that your character needs to stretch and change even this week. Here are the ways that you need to become a person who is worth following. And God, I ask that you would make us willing to make those changes, that this wouldn't just be one more Sunday, a conversation about a strange shipwreck story in Acts, but that this would be a reminder, a prompting, a day that changes things for us, because Sundays aren't just coming together and singing. Sundays are about reorienting ourselves to the truth of who you are and who you are calling us to be. God, make Movement Church a church full of people who are concerned about becoming the right person. We're going to give you all of the glory for it in Jesus' name.